TED Audio Collective.
Hello, Francis.
Hello, my love.
We get to record another episode of Fixable.
I love our weekly date.
It's a good day. So the topic of today is meetings.
Oh, it's like a great topic.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the worst meeting.
Oh, what a great question.
That I have ever been a part of. So one is coming to me. This was a company I worked at early in my career, and things were not going well.
So. And there were traces of the unwellness in the meetings.
There was, causality, we're going to try to establish that on this call, but definitely there was correlation between bad meetings and bad performance. But we all got dragged in. It was a young company. We were doing something really hard, and it wasn't working. And we all got dragged into the conference room, all, 20 of us at that stage. And the head of the company asked in the meeting, his opening line was, "What are all the junior people in this company doing?" And I, in my 20-something stupidity, thought it would be a good time to ask him what all the senior people were doing in the company. So you could start the clock on how long I lasted.
You know, this reminds me of the asking the question back. When I would get in trouble, my father would say, he would use Francis as my name, and otherwise he called me Franny. And he, at one point, didn't appreciate something I was doing, and he said, he would actually call me Francis Xavier. He's like, "I don't want to hear it, Francis Xavier." And I said, at the age of 8, "Then let me not hear it from you."
The same energy, which is why this memory is being triggered.
It was 8 years, were both 8. I just happened to be chronologically 8.
I was 22, but it was the 8-year-old in me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The company didn't make it. And maybe there was a connection there, that the stakes of getting meetings right is higher than we all realize. Welcome to Fixable. I'm Ann Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
And I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School, and I'm Ann's wife.
On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast, anything is fixable, and good solutions are often just a single brave conversation away.
What are we up to today, Ann?
Frances, we have a very special episode today. We are bringing on our first ever master fixer. So this isn't someone who's looking for help from us, but someone who's already earned some hard-won knowledge on a topic that they're going to share. Our master fixer today is Claire Hughes Johnson. She's the former COO of the financial services company Stripe, where she's still involved as an advisor and member of the board. Claire helped to build Stripe from a company with just over 100 employees to an organization with more than 50,000 people on the payroll. And before that, she was at Google, where she was a big part of their enormous growth as well.
She's also just written an amazing book, Scaling People, Tactics for Management and Company Building. And as you can see I'm doing right now, I just like to caress this book.
Listeners, Frances is cradling the book.
It has all of the answers. It has all of the answers in it.
These are strong words, Frances. So Claire's going to talk to us now about a topic which is very close to both of our hearts, and that is how to run a great meeting. Because as we all know, this is actually not easy to do.
And what Claire is so beautifully known for is she adds zeros. She's in companies when they're adding zeros to the number of employees and adding zeros to the revenues.
Yeah, so at Stripe, we're talking about millions, single-digit millions, and then we're measuring in billions the dollars coming in. So,
And Claire will say that one of the most critical things that we can do to facilitate that is to run great meetings. And for so many of us, that is such an elusive thing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Claire, welcome to Fixable.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be joining you.
We're very excited because you are our first master fixer that we are hosting on the show.
Wow. Is that like you go from being an apprentice to a journeyman to some kind of master? I love it. I got promoted so rapidly in this organization. Thank you.
Well, you knew management, so you got in there. All right. Well, we're going to get into it now. Today, we're on a mission to fix meetings, Francis. Before we dive in, I do want to give a little background on the current state of meeting affairs so people understand how big of an issue this really is. The first thing to know is that these days we are meeting more than ever before. So according to a study done by Microsoft, the amount of time workers are spending in meetings more than tripled between February 2020 and February 2022. Another study from the same year found that it's gotten to the point where the majority of Americans spend nearly a third of their working hours in meetings. And it's not like we had figured this out pre-pandemic. Even in the before times, meeting bloat was costing companies dearly. In 2019, the management consulting firm Korn Ferry did a survey and found that 67% of workers said excessive meetings were distracting them from making an impact at work. I mean, that's like an astonishing statement. That is your job when you go to work, is to have an impact, and meetings were getting in the way. That same year, Doodle, the meeting management tool, which I love, released a report estimating that across the U.S., UK, Germany, and Switzerland, pointless meetings cost companies about $500 billion a year combined. $500 billion.
What's astounding to me is that we have never met anyone who said, oh, good, meetings, right? And so in every company, we knew it was a problem, but I just never really thought to aggregate it like this. The numbers are astonishing.
So Claire, let's get you in here. What is your reaction to this astonishing data?
Yeah. You just made me think of, I remember I was in a meeting at Google, which was probably the biggest meeting I'd ever been in. We were in the biggest conference room we have. I don't know how many people are in there, 60? I mean, it was a lot of people. And as we walked out, the CFO at the time of Google was in the meeting. And I heard him turn to his colleague in front of me and say, oh my God, what that meeting cost. And he literally meant, I believe, the cost of the compensation of the people in that room, but I think probably also the opportunity cost of their time. And I've never forgotten that moment because it was the first time I actually started to think, should I do the math? Like when I have a meeting, should I be looking at like what we would bill by the hour and what we were costing the company? And it is a very important question to ask yourself, is the ROI actually positive on the 30 or 45 or 60 minutes you just spent? And unfortunately, and you're right, the answer is often no. And that is why meetings get a bad name.
And what else do you think is at stake, like in addition to the literal cost?
Well, I mean, I think the other thing is people talk a lot about culture. And the challenge with really bad meetings in a company is that is eroding the culture, because it is one of the purest expressions of how we work. And you have a bunch of bad meetings happening, especially if they're run by leaders in the company who are meant to be, you know, leading. It creates a sort of insidious decline of standards. So I think that's actually more costly, frankly, than how many billable hours got wasted.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the results. A bad meeting is probably not resulting in good outcomes. And so you're not moving the needle on the work you got to get done.
Right. It seems like a lot of companies now are trying to deal with this problem with a very blunt instrument, like no meeting Fridays, or should we just throw in the towel?
Yeah, it's like kind of a funny thing. Like, I think the medical analogy, which I don't know why this popped into my head, is like, oh, you just cut the tumor out, like just stop it.
Right.
And that is not this kind of problem. This is more like a weightlifting situation. This is right. More like you're weak and you need to lift progressively heavier weights to be stronger, you know, instead of cutting off your arm so that you don't lift any weights. I just find it so, because you cannot run a company, I'm sorry, I haven't figured out, without any meetings. Like, I don't think that's not really how humans work. So yeah, I'm always mystified by the, we're just going to get rid of them.
Do you have a theory on why this muscle is so underdeveloped?
I think it's because people don't realize a good meeting takes work, and it's a skill. And the people, multiple people involved need to have skills, and those skills need to be developed, and then they need to be honed. Just like, again, weightlifting or a sport, you need to practice and you need to get feedback and you need to get better. And I think that people feel like a meeting is a thing you put on a calendar and then people show up and that's it. It's just a block of time to talk. And you're just sitting there with this white space where no one's really prepared. And that is a meeting, but it is not actually what is the best use of that time.
Well, I want to get into everybody's role in this conversation because we're going to get super tactical.
Great.
But I want to get to the kind of upside case for meetings. You say in your book that your secret power is the ability to run a repeatable operating system for every team you manage, and that it has the same components: clear mission, stated goals, metrics that matter, similar meeting structures, and weekly and quarterly cadences. I feel like there are so many people and operators who would be surprised to learn that on your short list of superpowers, you're including the word meeting.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, this is how you do the work. And yes, there's a lot of work you can do by reading asynchronously and commenting on documents and sending emails, for sure. But in my experience and in my opinion, including my strengths as a leader, the most work you can get done that's the highest impact will be with other humans in real time. And
that's called meeting, everyone.
It's called a meeting.
Give us a little texture, Claire, on what a great meeting is. Like, how do we know we've gotten it right? And then again, we're going to figure out how to get there. But just tell us where we're heading.
First of all, not every meeting I run is perfection. And I just want to be clear,
for
those who know
that.
Me who are listening are laughing. But I will tell you my lesson that I learned repeatedly is the more that I prepare for that meeting, the better the meetings are. And the meeting type that I am famous for are what I call offsites, but they're often on-site. But anyway, they're really when you pull everybody out of the day-to-day and you stick them in a room for half a day or a whole day. The amount of time I spend preparing for that time is very high. And then the payoff is often quite high because I've actually really thought about it. So the number one thing is you've got to have the preparation, which involves, you know, understanding why are you meeting? What are the objectives of this time? What are we trying to accomplish? You need to think about who needs to be there to meet that objective. Often we are confused about who needs to be in the meeting, and it starts to become kind of a clown car of everybody who can get into the room because it somehow signifies something. And then do people understand the agenda of time? Like, how are we going to spend the time together? Because it's important that they understand that, because you'll hear the expression, someone has hijacked a meeting. I think if someone has hijacked a meeting, maybe 5% of the time, that's their fault a little bit. But most of the time, it's because they did not know the purpose of the meeting or how the time was meant to be spent. And then they just made their own decision, and I don't blame them.
I love that reframing. If you put material in front of a group of people, they're going to talk about what comes to mind in the absence of
Yeah, they're
going
to talk about what they would like
rails.
To talk about.
Yeah. And which will be the materials digested in many, many different ways.
So, yeah, you want to have, why are we meeting? The agenda was, we were just talking about, how are we going to spend the time? So everyone's sort of expectations are set. And then the limit, meaning we are going to end.
And are you putting this down on paper beforehand? Are you briefing everyone when we come into the meeting? Is this on a piece of paper labeled agenda? Is it loaded up in your head so that you can skillfully manage?
Oh, no. There's always an agenda. No, one of my biggest lessons earlier in my career, which is, you know, you learn you have to manage different people differently, and you learn there are different work styles and preferences. And I am someone who's very comfortable with ambiguity, and I'm comfortable being told with about 30 seconds notice, hey, this thing is about to happen. Francis, this is how Francis takes advantage of me sometimes. I'm like, all right, I'll just roll with it. You know, but I, you know, had some people on my teams who I noticed like just didn't really perform optimally. And I went and I kind of was curious and I said, tell me what's going on, or how could that have gone better? Or what happened? Often in a meeting, by the way. And they would say to me, I didn't get any material ahead of time and I need to think. Because they're often introverts, right? So extroverts talk to think and introverts think to talk. And what I had been doing is basically being biased against my poor introverted team members by not giving them any thinking time prior to having to talk. And so what did they do? They just did not talk. And I don't blame them, because I didn't give them an agenda. I didn't give them the pre-read. They were in the moment having to react. And that is not comfortable for certain people's brains.
Well, let's go to an adjacent topic, which is broadly running an inclusive meeting. So there's going to be a range of people in the room with different needs, different perspective, different levels, different life experiences, different relationships to the problem, and whatever else is on the agenda. How do you make sure that you are honoring those different needs and getting all of the voices that need to be weighing in on the conversation to be active?
So I think it's actually a pretty Jedi level thing to have designed, architected the whole meeting, and then to facilitate it and be a participant. Especially if there's a very important decision. And by the way, when I do the whole, all of it at once, which I have done, I am exhausted.
And
I'm pretty high energy extrovert. I am exhausted because I have done 7 roles at once. I've been taking notes, running the meeting, making decisions, facilitating, making sure I'm inclusive. Like, that is a lot to ask of one human. And so I'm really a big believer in being clear about, not only is everyone's role in the meeting to be engaged and to participate in meeting the objective, and they should be there because they help meet the objective, but there can be roles. There can be a note taker. There can also be a facilitator, or something that I've heard called a process person. And this is a long-winded answer, Anne, to your question, which is, I've seen it be actually pretty effective. And again, you have to publicly state this to give the person air cover, which is to say, I've asked Sarah to just really help observe the meeting, make sure that we're sticking to our objective, and also to observe participation and to pause the meeting and invite, if there's been people we've not heard from or people that she's noticed are trying to participate who are not seeming like they're getting the airtime. And you give this person permission to say, hey, we haven't heard from Anne yet. Anne, did you have an opinion on this decision we're making? Are you good? Like, not put Anne on the spot, but just make sure that everyone has had an opportunity to participate.
It's a beautiful way to do it. In the times when I haven't divided up the job, and I'm going forward, because the exhaustion thing is real. But when I've been doing the multiple hats in one meeting, and we think of how to run an inclusive meeting, I try to explicitly seek difference. Mm. So what I do is, like, if we have a meeting, we're going to make a decision and call on the first person to, and, you know, whoever raises their hand gets to speak first. If I'm not careful and I just then call on the next person, chances are if the first person said A, the second person is going to say near A. And then the third person is going to say near A. So what I do is call on the first person, and after they speak, I've learned to say it in a pretty tight set of words. Can someone articulate a different point of view? And the language there matters, because I'm not asking if someone has, because for some people, particularly of lower status, they don't want to take that risk. So can someone articulate a different point of view? And then, so then the next person says B, and then I just say that sentence one final time. Can someone articulate a different, an even different point of view? And then we have diverged early so that we can get to a much higher convergence, as opposed to the converge early to a super low optimum.
Right. Higher quality convergence, right? Because everybody has heard all of the points of view. I think that's great. And I think, Francis, you're right, because people will often just pile and say, well, I agree with what so-and-so said. And this is another form of a more subtle inclusion issue, which is when people restate what someone else has said and then act like they owned it and not really give credit to the person. And so I try to create a norm around, let's really listen, acknowledge contributions, not repeat, and add if it's really important to add. But I think you're on the right track, which is actually we're looking for more divergence. And this is where your agenda section is important, which is we're going to spend 5 minutes talking about the thing. What is it? And then we're going to spend 20 minutes diverging all the potential decisions we might make, and then we're going to converge, right?
Do any of these rules change in our hybrid, Zoom-filled remote world, or is it the same stuff?
The thing that's increased in the hybrid world is what, again, this is sort of a Stripe vocabulary word that's a real word, but the lurkers. But, you know, there's a little bit more of people who are like, well, I think I might join. I'm just going to have my video off because I'm kind of like going to be in the background doing other stuff. But if I hear something interesting or my name, I might, you know, de-lurk is what we call it at Stripe. I'm going to de-lurk, you know, anyway. So I think that I would, again, more formalize that. Let me give an example. We have a meeting type that, well, we call it the fishbowl because we wanted to create a meeting where we'd be doing real work, often with the founders, on decisions and direction for a lot of more creative things in the company. And what we realized is it's not comfortable to have a lot of people actively in that meeting, or either physically or on Zoom on their cameras, talking about creation and design. But it's incredibly valuable for people to watch that in action. And so we created this fishbowl thing where people could lurk in and either watch live people in a conference room, seriously, with the cameras off on Zoom from another room, or now on Zoom, but with their cameras off and quiet, so that they could get up to speed on how we make certain types of creative decisions.
What a great education, and great for the culture, great for everything.
And a great use of technology. Like, suddenly you can scale access to that meeting in a way that's not disruptive, but in a way that was impossible before.
Well, thank you for saying. I mean, I will take a little, I came up with this with our head of product marketing because we were frustrated that we couldn't scale some of that tacit knowledge. But I think taking advantage of what's happening in the hybrid world more is the name of the game, but making explicit. People need to be told, because we all have different expectations, right, of what's going to happen when you're on your laptop talking to somebody.
How do I know if I should be meeting in person?
I just always had the position that you can't run virtually for too long. And too long can have different definitions. But in the case of me, basically the initial sales leaders for Stripe across various countries, and I was like, guys, look, we're going to travel to be together once a quarter. And so one, I want to set that expectation, and that, like, being part of this team means we're going to be together once a quarter. And for some of you, that's going to be harder than for others of you. Some of you are driving 40 minutes and some of you are flying like 7 hours, right? Or longer, Asia, you know? And I think they got that it mattered because we were new, the company was new, we hadn't gelled. But I think you know, spending quality time in person means you can run fast when you're apart. So I would never let go of that. I think then you just have this slider scale of like, how much friction is it to be in person? And then the stakes just have to be higher. If it's a lot of friction, the stakes are going to be high.
All right, we're going to do a quick lightning round. Claire, you ready?
Yeah.
How long should meetings be?
The amount of time you need to meet your objective, but definitely don't be conservative about that. Be a little aggressive. So if you think it's going to take an hour to get to a decision, I would test yourself by trying to do it in 45 minutes.
I love that.
How much notice do people need for a meeting? Can I send an invitation the day of?
I think if it is warranted, i.e. we have new information, it is urgent, people are actually quite forgiving. If it is not warranted, I think you need to give people at least a day's notice, but ideally more than that.
So for a half a day meeting, how much would you prepare for a half a day meeting?
So, I mean, it sort of depends on the context, but the first thing that popped into my mind is at least half the time. So if it's a 4-hour meeting, I probably spent 2 hours preparing for it.
How do I gracefully decline a meeting?
Basically, you say, from what I can tell about this meeting, I'm not required for the topic. If I'm wrong about that, please let me know, but I'm going to decline. By the way, you don't actually start a dialogue. You can just say, let me know, but my default is no. And then if they want to come back to you and persuade you, fine.
If I'm hosting a meeting, Claire, do I need to provide snacks?
I think if you are hosting a long meeting and there are humans involved, humans are animals that need energy. And no, it's really wise to make sure people get up and stretch.
I think it's a clean yes.
I think it's a yes. I think you've got to feed the people something because you need them to be productive. You need them to get up and run around the room 3 times. You need them to eat a snack. You need them to have their bio breaks. But if you're not planning for normal human stuff to happen, you are not planning well.
Love it. Last question. What's the best way to end a meeting?
Well, you do a checkout, but first you'd remind everyone about the objective of the meeting. You want people to feel momentum. You want to remind them, hey, our objective was this, and we did this. If there's any action items that were generated, you want to remind people of the action items because I like people to know what they own and when they're due. And then you do want to make sure if there was a decision, everyone should know what's next. Everyone should know the next steps as you close the meeting. And then if bonus, you could do a checkout, which is I like to do like a 2-word checkout as we're ending the meeting, 2 words for like what you're thinking, feeling right now, because it gives you a little quick feedback, a little pulse check.
Wait, let's just do it. Francis, quick checkout, 2 words. What are you feeling right now?
Super happy.
She's very literal.
And what's your checkout? You can have 3 words if you want. This is a small meeting, so we have more time.
I'm really energized. This feels accessible. I'm feeling a little bit of humility at my legacy of poor meeting management, that I feel like I hosted meetings where I wasn't really honoring the potential of the gathering.
Remember how I started, Anne? Even I violate the rules of great meetings because it's so tempting.
It's impossible to imagine, Claire Hughes Johnson. But 2 words for you.
Really encouraged. Not enough people talk about the tactics, like how you do things that seem basic, but are actually the bulk of what we all do together. And so I'm so glad that Fixable is confronting these topics. And I'm so appreciative to be invited to talk about meetings.
Claire, this has selfishly been so much fun for us. Thank you for sharing.
Fun for me too.
So much of yourself and so much of your time. And
any excuse to collaborate with you is just a delight. So thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
I feel the same way. Thank you for letting me be your first master. And I hope, you know, whatever our next master meeting is, I want in and I'm happy to help run the meeting.
Thanks, everybody. This is our show, Fixable, with Anne and Frances.
We want to hear from you, too. If you want to figure out a workplace problem together, send us a message. Email us at fixable@ted.com or call us at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253.
We look forward to the next time. Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Frances Fry.
And me, Anne Morris. This episode was produced by Isabel Carter. Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Sarah Nix, Jimmy Gutierrez, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Ban Ban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer.
We'll be bringing you new episodes of Fixable every week. So please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
And one more thing, if you can please take a second to leave us a review. We love hearing from our listeners, particularly when they have nice things to say about us.